Dr. Show!
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it nerdy.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 89. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. I can tell you with confidence, this is the freshest John of All Trades content you will probably ever get. Why? Because I'm recording this intro. I recorded this episode. He just left literally the day before it goes live. Today is Tuesday. It goes live on a Wednesday. I'm turning it around as quickly as possible, and the reason is it's topical, and it's topical in a way that I love and I adore. My guest was good enough to come and indulge me with it because he's a longtime fan too. What am I talking about? WrestleMania. WrestleMania is coming up this Sunday. We've got Roman Reigns facing Triple H for the WWE Championship. We've got Shane McMahon fighting The Undertaker, where if Shane McMahon wins, he gets control of Monday Night Raw. And coincidentally, if The Undertaker loses, it is his last WrestleMania match. So, a lot at stake there. You've got Dean Ambrose fighting Brock Lesnar, two of my favorites. You've got an undercard that's stacked, Chris Jericho and AJ Styles going at it. An Intercontinental title ladder match, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Stardust, Zack Ryder. I'm missing a couple others, Sin Cara, Dolph Ziggler, The Miz. They're all going to be in this match. WrestleMania is a spectacle. It's the high holy days for me, because as a lifelong wrestling fan, this is what I look to. I adored this, and we talk a little bit about our origin story, but for the longest time, wrestling was everything to me growing up. It was my comic books. Some people grew up loving comic books. Some people loved Star Wars. I didn't give a shit about Star Wars. I still largely don't. I appreciate Star Wars, and I love people who love Star Wars. Like, that's your thing. Wrestling was that to me. So just so you understand where I'm coming from, that's the origin of this episode. And my guest is Nathan Lund. Now, Nathan Lund is a great, great Denver-based comedian. He's a member of the Fine Gentlemen's Club. Every Wednesday night, they have their show at Deer Pile above Sitio City. He's also the Denver Comedy Champion. And I'll prove it to you. Go to the blog, johnofalltrades.us, johnofalltrades.us, and you will see him holding his Denver Comedy Championship belt. Now, what belt am I holding? It's a replica of a WWE Tag Team Championship belt, and that's what I award to people who win the Beirut tournament that I play here. Beirut, also known as beer pong, whatever. You see us holding our belts. So that's the depth of our nerddom. He's wearing a Lucha Libre and Laughs shirt. He also hosts that. He plugs it at the end of the episode. I'm wearing my Macho Man Randy Savage shirt. So we sat down in the basement, and we just geeked out for like an hour. I think I made him late to his next appointment, but we were just talking wrestling, and that's when I lose myself. I mean, it's an indulgence, it's goofy, it's melodrama, it's akin to what David Shoemaker, who used to write for Grantland, says, it's like in Shakespearean times when they would play to the back of the house wearing big wooden masks, conveying, you know, the most basic emotions. But that's what it is, it's live theater, intercut with athleticism, and it's just enormous fun. I adore it. And so to do this episode with a fellow wrestling nerd was just an incredible honor. So be sure to check out Nathan Lund. He plugs all of his stuff at the end of the episode. It'll also be on the companion blog piece. You'll find links to everything that he's doing. Again, that's johnofalltrades.us, johnofalltrades.us. And I'm pretty sure that's enough setup. I think you've got everything you need to know about this episode. Again, this is Tuesday that I'm recording this. It's going live in a matter of hours at this point. I don't normally turn around episodes that fast, but I thought it was important to be as topical as possible. The fact that I do that for professional wrestling probably doesn't reflect all that well on me, but what can you say? You love what you love. You are who you are. I'm a married guy. I have a kid. I have another kid on the way. If I'm not me at this point, then there's never going to be any hope for me. So let's get to it then. Episode 89 of the John of All Trades podcast. It's with wrestling fan and comedian Nathan Lund. And let's start it right now.
We had our fifth anniversary at the beginning of this year.
Right.
January 5th. So yeah, we started doing the show beginning of 2011. And we decided to be a thing maybe a couple of months before that, because then we tried to find a venue.
Right.
So yeah, we were just hanging out a lot. We were like, man, you know, and there weren't a ton of shows. There weren't a whole ton of shows. So we thought, let's do a show. And then we said, you know, let's call ourselves something so that we weren't just four dudes doing a show.
Right.
And yeah, that took a little while. We came up with the Fine Gentleman's Club, and then yeah, came up with Too Much Fun a little bit after that.
Yeah, you know, there's four of you. Any inclination to be in the Four Horsemen?
No, it was just, well, the three people that hung out first or more, I think, were me, Bobby, and Chris. Mm-hmm. And then Chris and Sam had been hanging out also. And so Chris suggested Sam as a fourth. So we would have been three.
Okay.
I didn't really know Sam as well as the other two guys.
Okay. I only asked that because of the theme of today.
Yeah.
And I fancy you either a Barry Windham
yeah,
or a Tully Blanchard.
All right. Well, yeah, they're both a little taller than me. I thought you were going to say Arn Anderson because I'm an enforcer.
Okay.
But
I thought maybe Sam's the enforcer. I don't know you guys that well.
Sam's a big dumb animal. He might be Barry Windham. Tully Blanchard. Could he talk? I don't. Tully Blanchard was kind of before my time.
Yeah, no, Tully could talk. Tully was pretty good. Who's the flair of your group?
Sharpie. He's got the hair. He's got the right. flair. He's got the strut.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sharpie's like front and center. He also was kind of our rock as far as, or the leader as far as kind of, you know, booking people every week. He also drew the flyer almost every week for a long time.
Yeah, you know, I read an interview in the Westward with him about working the flyers, and the flyers were always so cool looking.
Yeah, he crushed it. You know, he got to just pick something every week, you know, and it was just up to him what he wanted to put on there, and it was all over the place. Sometimes it would be topical, but for the most part, it would just be like just the craziest, like a bird, you know, just a random, a bird or an old man with a long neck, you know, and the variety was great. You know, people were always stoked to see what he was going to come up with next. And then he started doing, you know, he did a couple other flyers too. He did a few arguments and grievances flyers that were cool. So yeah, he has that to do if he wants. You know, he could do that out in LA now.
That's awesome. They always look good.
Custom flyers by Sharpie.
You know, I was admiring your championship belt, which you were good enough to bring along.
Hell yeah. Might as well put it on my lap.
Yeah, totally. My belts, which you'll see in the photo when we do this, I have my crappy little styrofoam, like, tag team championship belt for when I have Beirut or beer pong tournaments here. I wanted to have a belt. I personally, given my upbringing and that when I was growing up, wrestling was everything to me. It was like my comic books. It was what I turned to. I'm like, I got to have a belt, man. Like, if I'm going to have a tournament, there's got to be a belt at the end of it, right?
Yeah, you want some legitimacy. And a trophy is, you know, bowling, it's right. tennis, it's boxing.
Participation trophies.
It can be boxing. Yeah, so there's cool trophies, but there's also lame trophies.
Yeah.
But a title, a championship title belt is, you know, more gladiator like you know, boxing, wrestling,
UFC.
Yes. So yeah, there's a little bit more physicality or some toughness.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
well, and it denotes like I'm wearing this, you got to come and take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is mine.
Yeah, come and get it,
and not yours. And if you want it, you're gonna have to take it. Yeah,
you're gonna have to earn it.
That's that's my thing. I mean, I've defended this thing 5 times, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
They say you're not a champion until you defend it.
Yeah, you have to be a fighting champion, yeah. You can't be a coward. You can't duck challenges. I just yesterday put out on Facebook, you know, I told Denver Comics that if they want to challenge me, if they want to try to get a shot at the title, to cut a promo.
Yeah.
And then tag me in it on Facebook, and we'll see if, who ends up getting the next shot. Because... yeah, you know, people challenge me, but then I figured might as well put it out there for anybody that wants a shot.
Has anyone stepped up yet?
I haven't gotten anything yet, but that was just yesterday, so I'm thinking maybe tomorrow, you know, Thursday.
Well, tomorrow this episode airs. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is the quickest turnaround I will have ever done on an episode
To
this point.
I hope you're ready.
And, yeah, well, you know, you got to rise to the challenge. You got a champion here.
Yeah.
So, and the reason is we've got WrestleMania coming up on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the road to WrestleMania. Last night was Monday Night Raw. It was the go-home episode of Raw. I know you didn't catch it.
I didn't see it yet. No, I got to watch it on Hulu.
But I wouldn't say you missed a whole lot.
Yeah.
You had Shane and Undertaker having a pretty good face-off. It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
The Brooklyn crowd just absolutely eviscerated Roman Reigns.
That sucks. You know, it sucks because I think that's just become a piggyback thing, you know, that, that everybody, and it's bullshit because whatever boring, you know, things or, you know, same old movesets, that thing that, that people used to shit on is gone for the most part because he's had some good matches and he's so fucking strong. Have you seen some of the shit he has done? He's lifted Brock Lesnar up, you know, with one arm, you know, over his head. Some of the shit that he's done should have won over these crowds. And the only reason they're not is because it's a gag now.
Right.
It's the what chant, you know, it's just wrestling fans are, you know, so quick to jump onto whatever, you know, bandwagon a certain crowd sets. And a few crowds set the shitting on Roman Reigns thing. And, you know, they wouldn't have to chant this or, you know, shit on him if a few different people didn't get hurt because he'd be a part of a mix of top people. That couldn't happen because of injury. And so it's not his fault. And like I said, he had that. Did you see the Hell in the Cell match he had with Bray Wyatt?
Yeah, that match was all right.
They beat the shit out of each other. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was good.
And so, yeah, I mean, you have a couple matches like that, you're not really supposed to still get, you know, shit on for being boring. He's not boring anymore. He's done some stuff that was really exciting. So
I feel like Roman Reigns is collateral damage here, though.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because they did it right when he lost to Sheamus after 5 minutes, 15 seconds, which, okay, that to me wasn't a choice I would have made.
It's not a Sheamus guy. Good.
But he won it back from Sheamus with the odds stacked against him. He punched out the boss. He beat up Triple H. It's like, okay, he had his moment, and this moment is awesome. And then they make him defend in the Royal Rumble, and he loses to Triple H. He's a victim of circumstance here and lazy storytelling. And I feel like he's collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like the audience views him now as a guy unable to win the big one, even though he's now done that twice.
Once
at Survivor Series, beating the tournament field and dispatching his best friend Dean Ambrose.
Right.
And then he loses to Sheamus. Then he gets his big moment again that popped a huge rating on Raw. Everyone was into that.
The title. Yeah.
And then they sank him at the Royal Rumble. And now he has to chase yet a third time here against Triple H, and I don't know. I'm personally burned out by just their inability to tell more than one story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's been one type of story. I was watching the Attitude Era not that long ago, and it's fucking Austin McMahon again.
Right, yeah, they're trying to go back to that. If the company screws over a guy...
Yeah, the virtuous
babyface.
Because
they don't want him. Yeah, because they don't want him to be the top guy. But he makes it happen anyway, then it's supposed to work. But yeah, it's not going to work with Roman.
No,
they tried to place him into that spot, and it doesn't really fit. It's not the same as like Daniel Bryan was perfect for that spot.
He was awesome.
Because he's a smaller guy.
Right.
Why wouldn't they want why wouldn't they want The Rock's cousin to be the champion? Are you kidding me? It doesn't make sense. They have to go a different route. And yeah, he's suffering because of it. But once they figure it out, once they move past WrestleMania, hopefully they have something in store that could make more sense. Like, they just need to he needs to have a few good matches with a good opponent.
Yeah.
Like a Seth Rollins. I think they could have probably had a great
feud. They could have tore the house down, probably.
Right, and gotten a few good matches together, and then whether he ended up on top or not, he still would have looked better in the eyes of fans, but... I've been into, you know, I mean, it's been nice that they have more time for Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar.
I agree, yeah. I'm stoked by that feud.
A lot of people are, and because there weren't all eyes on that, the two of them, you know, they were able to figure it out on their own or go in a couple different directions that they wouldn't have been able to if they weren't focusing on Roman and Triple H.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll tell you, I don't think the Authority storyline works in 2016. Mm-hmm. And here's why. There was a huge disconnect for me. Do you read about this online? Like, do you follow?
No, I used to. I used to love to read the Something Awful forums had a bunch of big wrestling nerds in it. And so I'd just follow
Sure.
Follow the few of those threads, yeah.
So one of the things that they put online was after Reigns won the title, after he punched out Vince McMahon, the CEO and the chairman of the board of the company, the official WWE Twitter account said, "A new champion deserves new side plates." And so they showed it off. It was this glowing post, something I'd expect from a corporation announcing a new champion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it goes against everything that they put together in that storyline.
Right.
So there's a disconnect from the product they're putting and their real life, their like real world facing social media accounts.
Yeah.
And you go, well, which one is real? You're undercutting your own storytelling with this.
Right. You got to pick one or the other.
Yeah. Sure. Like either Vince is a heel and is a bad guy and Triple H and Stephanie are. But then on the same show where we're supposed to boo Stephanie, she's out there as the smiling brand ambassador doing work for Susan G. Komen.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, it can't fucking be both.
Right.
Like
yeah.
you're just irritating your audience. And you're underestimating their intelligence, which, I mean, we're talking about wrestling fans here, so.
Yeah, but we're all smarter now.
Agreed.
It's not just the dumb people in society like it used to be. We're out of the swamps. We're out of the backwoods.
We're out of the hills. It reminds me of
everybody now. It's a big old cross-section.
It's on ESPN. You know, SportsCenter's doing regular segments on it. But back in the day, I remember hearing a story about when the Rock and Roll Express would come to town in these tiny little like Arkansas towns and Tennessee and Kentucky. And there would be the town would announce or would have a published population of like 1,500 people and 4,000 people would show up at the show.
Yeah.
And it was people who would come out of the hills to come see the Rock and Roll Express.
Unincorporated.
Yeah.
The hills of Tennessee. Yeah. The Appalachians.
Yeah. Crazy times, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a different product, and I'd like to see them treat the authority figure like they treat Regal in NXT. Just this guy who sort of sets the matches, doesn't really have an agenda one way or the other, doesn't get involved physically, but it's like, okay, I'm trying to set the best course for the show. That makes more sense to me as a publicly traded company.
Yeah, there's a lot of different directions they could go in that would make more sense, and I don't know what they're going to do. Obviously, whether Shane wins or loses is going to dictate a lot.
Yeah.
It seems weird to have this be a stipulation that comes out of nowhere and for him to lose, but it seems really weird to have Undertaker lose again at WrestleMania. So I really don't know which one will end up happening, but it would be kind of nice if, I mean, maybe that is Shane's legit gripe is like, or somebody's gripe was like, we got to do something different. And maybe that is it where Shane comes in and it's not like that. You know, anymore or for a while, like just have it be where Shane gives the fans what they want, the big, you know, the big title match. There's no, I don't know. It's a defense mechanism, I think, for the McMahons to insert themselves into a storyline because they know they can get everybody to boo them.
Right. That's true.
So they always can fall back on that or whatever. But yeah, they have to move away from it or else people are going to stop watching again if they're not careful. I mean, I think they have so many talented athletes that, like, I still like being able to watch the Hulu version of Raw is an hour and a half.
That sounds way better.
I mean, but what sucks is I could be missing out on a couple great matches
because they
have the McMahon, you know, promos in there instead. Right. But still, it's nice to have there be, you know, a condensed version so that you just don't feel like you're watching 9 hours of wrestling.
Yeah, because
I don't want that anymore.
No, everyone has their limits, and it's too much. I kind of really got back into it when my daughter was born because it's an easy thing to dip in and out of, and to follow along, and it's entertaining. And
to catch up or whatever.
Yeah, and so they'll
recap it for you
exactly
a couple times each week, whatever's going on,
right? Yeah. And you can dedicate your time, you know, when time allows. But if you're sort of in and out, if she's crying or you're feeding her or changing her or whatever, then you don't feel like you're missing a whole lot. Whereas, like, it would be hard to sit down and, like, start watching, I don't know, Deadwood or Breaking Bad or something.
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, especially because you've watched it for so long, you know that there's certain...
Yeah, I'm attuned to the rhythms.
Yeah, there's rhythms, there's... Yeah, there's going to be certain... You can catch who's hot, who's coming up or whatever. Yeah, hopefully they can try to focus attention on who they have, you know, and get move away from the McMahons because they have so many talented young guys and the women's wrestlers are great. They have like so many great women's wrestlers.
Sasha
right now.
Banks is tremendous.
Yeah, yeah, and there's talk that maybe Bayley comes up from NXT because she's like really good. You know, she's just a solid wrestler.
Pure babyface.
People
too.
Like her. Yeah, people can get behind her right away.
I mean,
away.
Like grown men wearing purple shirts to say I'm a hugger.
Yeah, yeah, you want to get a hug from Bayley for sure. She's yeah, she can't be a bad guy probably ever, but that's okay.
I think that's all right. I mean, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat was never a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Tito Santana was never a bad guy.
Right. Yeah. Just.
It's hard to picture Sami Zayn being a bad guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, he probably won't be for a while. If yeah. he would, he'd have to, like, somehow they'd bring back El Generico. They'd have him go under the mask and be a bad guy or something.
I heard El Generico died. Mm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, and trained Sami Zayn in Mexico right before his passing.
His last move. Yeah, to pass on the legacy.
Yeah, his unfortunate passing. But going back a little farther, how did you get into this? Because I'm always interested in people's story. Because wrestling, when I was growing up, the first event I ever remember seeing was WrestleMania II in like 1986. So I was like 4 years old, and my dad was showing it to me. Because my dad grew up in Chicago, was a big AWA fan back in the territorial days. Mm-hmm. And so he'd show me some AWA, you know, Nick Bockwinkel and Vern Gagne and all these old-timey guys. And then WWF went national. And I started to get into it, and once I really got into it, I think he started regretting that. He's like, oh, I got my son into this. That's that's great. But what was the story for you? Like,
well, it was on TV. I remember I was sick. I think I might have gotten the chicken pox.
And you grew up in Chicago, too, right?
Yeah, I grew up right outside of Chicago. And I was sick, and so my grandma asked me what I would want as far as, like, magazines to read from the store, because I was going to be sure. out for a couple of days. I think I must have had the chicken pox because they knew I'd be sick for a couple of days. So they're like, we'll get you some stuff to read and some, and maybe they rented a couple movies or whatever. And I just remember wanting WWF magazine. And that was when I was 9.
Yeah.
So I was like 91. The Ultimate Warrior was on TV. Like, he was the next big guy. But
he won his first world title at WrestleMania 6, I remember.
Yeah.
In 1990.
So it was 90, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was on top, and Hogan was kind of going away. And I didn't love Hogan. Like, I liked him, but I liked the Warrior better because he was faster.
Sure.
And I liked the face paint, and, you know, he'd wear different outfits. It wasn't always just, you know, the same trunks. So, yeah, he was kind of exciting. And
his promos were unhinged.
Right, yeah. He was yelling. He was talking about being out from a different universe and stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, there was a lot going on, and I got into it pretty quick. I'd already liked sports.
Sure.
You know, so it was just like another different, like, crazier kind of sport, you know, with these bigger personalities. And so that was, you know, and then I got the toys pretty quickly, and the toys, the wrestling figures were great, and the little ring, and I just, dove in pretty quick.
Did you have the little, like, 4-inch Hasbro ones?
The hard plastic ones, yeah.
Yeah, I had those. I still have those up at my parents' house. Mm. They each had their, like, spring action.
Right, yeah, they'd all do a little thing, either with their arms or their legs, yeah. They were great. I don't know why they moved away from those, but...
And then
they tried to come back, and the ones they have now are too, like, tall and skinny. They have, like, the Barbie factor, Barbie effect, where they're disproportionate or whatever. I don't know. I didn't like them as much.
No, they're not. I mean, it's not the same, but nothing's the same as when you were a kid.
Right, yeah. So. Well, yeah, and my dad gave all of my magazines and action figures to a kid on his bus route, because he still drives school buses.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wonder what happened with that kid. Hopefully, he really appreciated him because it was a gold mine. Yeah, as far as you go read through those back issues, he was going to get caught up on, like, really actually some of the shittiest times for WWF was I had that
steroid
subscription
trials,
through the mid 90s. Well, yeah, and after that, when it was because of the steroid trials, they had, like, the smaller guys and the weirder characters. The TL Hoppers and the
fucking
Goon.
Mantar.
Yeah, they were trying to be sillier and move away from the big muscular guys because they Vince had to back away from any kind of steroid connection.
Right, and the only guys who were over were like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart.
Yeah, I'm glad for that they were able to get their break. They might not have gotten that break if it weren't for the controversy.
Yeah.
But, and then also, Hogan, when Hogan left, they were able to have their time, you know, away from him to show what they could do. Or you know, because for a while, like, Brett had to wrestle, you know, Mabel or Diesel or Hakushi, and it was like, yeah, I mean,
Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
Yeah, you know, yeah, they were just, they weren't prime, like, no. the next big stars. And then when they had it be Brett and Sean, it was like, yeah, these guys can go. And yeah. So, yeah, I was able to latch on to Brett more than Sean, you know, but I liked both of them. And then Stone Cold came in 96, you know. And,
yeah,
and
he cast took away over. From WCW.
He took over for me. I mean, I liked WCW, too, and watched on TBS, you know, Saturday night.
Sure.
I was into that, but, it, you know, WWF just was like the home, like the, I thought it was the better show for a while, you know. Well, really the whole time. I just always liked it a little bit more. And then it was great to be able to watch both when they both, you know, exploded. That was a crazy time. It was like in the dark where like only a couple of my friends liked wrestling.
Right.
And then I moved in 94, I moved. And then like 96, 97 was when it got huge.
Like NWO, right?
Yeah, 98. And then it was like everybody watched, you know, for this couple of years. And when, that was when I was in high school.
Yeah, me too. I mean, similar story. So question for you, when you were younger, were you sort of like, were you out in your fandom or did you kind of keep it from your friends?
Well, yeah, there, like I said, there were a couple friends.
Yeah, because I had like two or three friends that were cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, everybody knew that I watched wrestling, but yeah, we only really shared it with a couple of friends. And then the other friends, I was fine to talk about basketball or football, baseball. I watched all of those also. So it was just a, you know, and it was within the same group of friends, so it just depended on who was hanging out.
Oh, right, sure.
What we were talking about. Yeah, I don't think we got too much shit for it.
I can't.
The wrestling.
I was afraid of getting shit for it, because I don't know why, because I think the most common question was, don't you know it's all fake? And,
yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, well, okay, it's fake, but you're thinking of this shit the wrong way.
Sure.
Like, it's an athletic competition, and yeah, they're working together, but, you know, it's not... I wouldn't call it fake any more than I would call like a stage production of 12 Angry Men fake.
Right.
It's like, don't you know they're not in a real jury?
Yeah. It's like, well, that's the argument, I think. Yeah, is that it requires as much of a suspension of disbelief as any other entertainment. That
yeah,
is...
like a fucking improv show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know,
pantomiming movie,
making a cake.
Anything, yeah, that gets put on for entertainment value. It's like, well, yeah, we don't have to watch this. Yeah, we could do all kinds of other shit. But
right.
If you sit down and shut up for a little bit, you'll realize this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fun storytelling. I mean, to me, there's...
Especially if you haven't seen it. Like,
yeah,
it's fun doing Lucha Libre and laughs every month at the Oriental. Like, so many of my friends have been like, oh, we saw wrestling. We're like, yeah, wrestling. But it's not all just the cheesy playing it up, you know, playing it for laughs or for kids. You can have storytelling, athleticism. You can, you know, some of these guys can do shit that people don't expect to see at the Oriental, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They start, you know, flying out of the ring or just, you know, taking risks, and people get into it more often than not. Like, everybody has been surprised by how much fun they've had at Lucha Libre and laughs. And I'm like, yeah, now you get it. Like, it's more than just on paper, you know, a couple of guys pretending to fight. It's so much more than that. And when it's done right, you know, it's the same with, I mean, anything that's, you know, that there can be various levels of good or bad in all of the entertainment venues. And so it's same as good versus bad stand-up or improv or a good movie versus a bad movie. You know, it can be done, you know, great, and it can be lackluster. It just depends on who's doing the performing.
Yeah.
So, and we've been able to, Nick Gossard has been able to cultivate the right guys to do the show so that they can get in on the humor side, but also, you know that they can, you know, try to be physical and impressive. And, you know, Sam Talon and I are the commentators, and so we try to, you know, put them over while also making fun of them, making fun of their tattoos.
Right.
We try to make sure that, you know, we're selling the fact that they're talented.
It's Lucha Libre and laughs.
Yeah, it's both.
I mean, sure.
Best of both worlds.
Well, it reminds me of, like, what Jesse Ventura would do. You know, when he was commentating, he'd get his shots in where he could on yeah. the various wrestlers, but he always put over the angles. And he always put over the physicality.
Yeah, yeah. You can he could not like somebody, but he'd end right. up usually end up yeah giving him a compliment somehow.
He'd figure out a way to put them over for what they were trying to do, but sometimes he'd find like a backdoor way of doing that, which was always really cool. You compare that to someone like Kevin Nash, who is hilarious and just an objectively funny person, but was a total heat killer for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
He would find the thing about them that, you know, you'd try and downplay, and he'd play that up and just yeah. kill them, just smother them in the crib a lot of times. And it was frustrating to watch as a wrestling fan because it's like, no, man, you got to – like, you're doing a thing here.
Yeah, you're on the same team. Well, that's probably – that's got to be one of the reasons that it went to hell, WCW folded, was that yeah. – they had too many people that were self-serving or looking out for their own ass and a couple of their right. friends. And that's not going to fill a 3-hour show. It's not going to, you know, you're not going to be able to have a great pay-per-view card top to bottom if you've, shit on and ignored, right. a third of the roster. And they had such a great, smaller, younger undercard roster, but
the depth was incredible. Yes.
Yeah. And they should have been able to capitalize and, maybe, almost gotten rid of WWF. I mean, but it couldn't happen with Hogan and Nash and whoever else that was able to, stifle that.
Agreed. And too many guys with creative control in their contract.
When you read online or when you read the wrestlers' books, I love all that travel stuff, and it's the same with comics. Kindred spirits with traveling the road, staying wherever you can for free or for cheap.
Right.
Cutting corners, eating cheap, that's all, the same for struggling or up and coming wrestlers or comics.
And musicians.
And if you hold on to that work ethic, then you can survive. And that's sure. what Vince did, he pinched pennies or whatever,
right.
buckled down. WCW, acted like they were fucking, trust fund kids that were never going to die. And so they just blew all that money that they had. And then eventually people were like, yeah, this sucks. We're done. And WWF was able to get that second breath or whatever, figure out that Stone Cold and The Rock were worth getting behind. And Mankind, too. Mankind was able to come in and be.
And DX.
This great foil for Shawn Michaels. And then The Undertaker. You don't have some great matches without, Mick Foley coming in and being, the bad guy. And then to Stone Cold, too. He was able to be a great, opponent for so many guys in WWF. And that wouldn't have happened if WCW wouldn't have let him, leave.
Right.
If they would have realized what they had with him or whatever.
And who's to say they'd capitalize on that?
Yeah.
Because, that's the thing with Austin was, he was good when he was stunning Steve Austin. This pretty boy heel character. And then that, to me, that type of character, that sort of self-involved pretty boy, with the exception of maybe Shawn Michaels, just screams mid-card to me. Whereas Stone Cold, that's a main event character.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, they plugged him into the mid-card and then wondered why he didn't break out. They've said, so many wrestlers have said they just kind of have to have the time to figure out what their angle is, usually with somebody that can
right.
watch them, work or talk to them about, their background. And then that's where the right direction is for that person.
Well, shit, look at the New Day now.
Yeah.
I mean, the New Day really found themselves. They came out, they had this gospel music and, they were I don't know what they were supposed to be, these Southern black guys, I guess, which you go, okay. And then they're like, this isn't getting over. This isn't fucking working. You guys just do whatever you want. Just get yourselves over.
Yeah, they were allowed to be goofy instead of...
And that's who they are. Xavier Woods, if you've ever seen him interviewed in real life or seen him, he's the nerdiest of the nerds.
Mm.
He's great. He carries around like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles backpack. He's like a gamer. He's getting his PhD in education and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Kofi is Kofi's a big goofball. I read about him. He used to play video games in the back with CM Punk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Big E is one of the silliest motherfuckers you'll ever meet.
Yeah, he's just like a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess that might have been one of those times where they don't know what to do with a couple different guys, so they put them together. And
right.
If that makes sense. So that's like the Fine Gentleman's Club. We were already hanging out.
Yeah.
We gravitated towards each other. So if that happens in the back, they should go with it because it just has a better fighting chance, I think, of getting over with fans is when there's it's not forced or when right. it's not too serious. Anything that takes itself too seriously usually
right.
will fail. And it needs to be simple. Some of the easy, you know, Daniel Bryan saying yes is going to last forever because it's so easy. It's simple. It's not, you know, it's not a whole diatribe. There's not a lot to get behind. It's just chanting yes and pointing up. And something like that is a smart thing to try to start with because fans can do it easily. And then if you're good, they'll keep doing it. You know, they'll continue to like you. And
well, it gives you that X factor too. And have you read Daniel Bryan's book?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty great. I haven't
read a bunch of them, but not recently.
I'm in the middle of Jericho's second book. And
it's not as good as the first one.
No, not quite. And it's a lot about Fozzy.
Yeah, the first one's the best because he's just a doof and who traveled the world trying to make shit happen. Yeah, the second one is like after he's made it.
And it's really jokey too.
Yeah.
Like there's so many like jokey and like this like tortured wordplay.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I just remembered this at some point. Oh, yeah. Byron Graham used to do a regular interview for the Westward where we talked about books. And we talked about wrestling books because he knew that I was into wrestling. And I told him, oh, yeah, you know, Mick Foley's first, like, three are just all great. And I was like, and then Jericho's first book, but not the second one. Second one's not as good. And then he printed that I loved Jericho's second book specifically.
Did he just transcribe it wrong or what?
He switched the two, got confused between which one I liked and which one I didn't or whatever. I don't think he'd recorded it, so I think we just talked on the phone.
Right.
But I told him, I was like, if anybody gives me shit for this, I'm going to kill you. Because like, I figured there could have been a wrestling fan that would have been like, what? You preferred Jericho's second book? It's just not the same.
Did you read The Rock's book?
It came
out right after Foley's first book.
Yeah. And Foley's I probably read it.
Yeah. Foley's first book was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Just so good. Like, my mom read it. My mom loved it.
Yeah.
Like, everyone, I recommended it to everyone. I'm like, this is just a great story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he killed it.
Yeah. And then The Rock's book comes out, and it's clearly ghost written.
Right.
And then there are chapters written in character.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, God,
I read that for
this
sure.
This is fucking dire. It's like Foley.
Yeah, it was a weird way to go about it.
Yeah, Foley proves that wrestling fans have an appetite for books, goes onto the New York Times bestseller list, and then The Rock comes out, and I'm like, you're killing the fucking gimmick dead.
Yeah, it's just shit something out. I went to Miami, we played some football. I'm Samoan. Now, just, write it. He was probably so busy, I guess.
I don't know, man.
He just didn't have... I mean, Foley wrote it. Like on the plane. Yeah, on the plane, in hotels. Rock could have done that, but that's not the Rock style either.
And you've met Foley, right?
I just got to open for him, within the same
month. Oh, doing
his
comedy show?
Yeah, I opened for him, and then I didn't work with Kevin Smith, but I got to meet Kevin Smith.
Nice.
Both of them, within the same month, both of them huge influences on me. And
sure.
So yeah, that was crazy. That was like, you know, 4 months ago in December or whatever. Or between December and January, they both came to the two different comedy works.
What's Foley like?
They were both great. Foley's super sweet. He's doing the Santa thing still.
Right.
Like, I think he was wearing a Santa shirt backstage.
Christmas.
Yeah. He changed into a Cactus Jack shirt for the show. And I brought the Denver Comedy title and got a picture with him.
Yeah, that's your Facebook profile photo.
I told him what, and Deacon Gray was there, so he told Mick what I was doing, and he was like, oh, cool. He was into it, and I just told him how great I thought he was, you know, and he was very gracious and super funny. You know, he did, me and Deacon did like 20 minutes between us because he said how the shows had gone well with just about, 15, 20 minutes ahead of him.
Yeah.
And then he was out there for over an hour. And
Jesus.
He was great. Yeah, he answered questions. Kevin Smith, too, did the same thing. Talked for about an hour, then answered questions. And it seems like a great thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
Like, in between whatever charities or, you know,
sure.
I like the fact Mick does a ton of philanthropic work. And
notably with Rain.
Rain, yeah, is a big one for him. Rain and autism events are big. Kids specifically, you know, just huge on helping kids and meeting them. And I told him, yeah, just how that's, I mean, that's a great way to give back after. Yeah, and all he wanted to do was entertain those same people, but now he can do even more than entertain them. He can, you know, give them hope or brighten their week, you know, or give them a memory that they'll never forget. So he's just great, you know. It was awesome to be able to meet him, and hopefully he'll, you know, be able to keep doing it. He can't really bend over. Like he said, he can't crouch. There's a lot of things he can't do mobility because of his mobility issues, so that sucks. But he seems like he's pretty good, doing pretty well for all of the bumps that he took
all
and all the
ailments,
shots that he took to the head. Yeah, he's still able to talk and hold a conversation.
Yeah, and put together some good stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he remembers a lot from his career, so...
I remember I had Bree Davies down here on an episode that hasn't aired yet, but she talked to him and she knew, and she also interviewed Rob Rizin, and so she knows very little about pro wrestling, but she was struck just by what a great dude Mick Foley was.
Right.
And everyone I've ever met who has come across him has said the same thing. That's always so cool to hear, you know?
Yeah, not everybody that is famous or makes money, you know, to entertain people lets it turn them into an asshole. Yeah, he asked me if I knew Bree, and I said, yeah, she was in the front of the crowd. He was like, oh, I wanted to say hi to her because they just talked on the phone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that worked out perfectly.
Nice.
That I saw her in the front, and then I grabbed her after the show, and they got to meet. And yeah, he really appreciated her because he, you know, a lot of his interviews are probably just with fans like you that are going to get all nerdy on them.
Right.
And
sure.
talk about, you know, talk about some match with Sting from 95. But
remember when Vader.
So Vader, obviously the power bomb, you knew it was coming.
On the concrete.
Was it? Yeah. How bad was it? Yeah. He didn't have any of that with her.
Sure.
She just wanted to talk about his activist work, the work with Rain and just how much he helps.
Had to be refreshing.
Behind the scenes. Yeah. He loved that. You know, he wanted to be able to say thank you to her. And even on top of that, I'm sure she was, you know, just a good interviewer. She's good.
She's talented. Yeah.
Yeah, she's good at talking to people and covering just issues or whatever, especially here. But
yeah,
it was cool to be able to have them meet.
You know what's funny is I was just watching Fuller House and I got through that first season and Lori Loughlin's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, Lori Loughlin's in one of my favorite movies that no one knows, but it's Rad. The BMX movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
I love that movie. And I created a whole website. It was called the Crew Jones Society. So like... And that was the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, I asked my friend who also, like, he likes Rad. I showed it to him in college. And I said, if I were to ever meet Lori Loughlin, do you think she would be excited by or annoyed by me just wanting to ask her about Rad?
Talk about Rad. Now, I would say it wouldn't be as bad as, because for her, it's just Full House.
Right, yeah.
You know, almost exclusively. So I would say you'd be a little bit of a weird breath of fresh air to go back, to go further back in time.
Right, a breath of weird air.
Nostalgic. If she hasn't thought about Rad in a while, then she'd be like, oh, yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah, I was breaking into the business or whatever.
Yeah, hopefully it was a positive experience. Then she'd be probably pretty stoked.
One would hope. My friend Jason told me, though, he's like, she would probably be excited at first, and then probably potentially exasperated by how long you'd want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's... but
she'd just like the nice little reminder, and then she'd like
to move along.
Continue with her day.
Right.
Yeah, I'm glad that Rad touched you.
Yeah. Thank you. This is great. So you mentioned Bret Hart. You mentioned Stone Cold.
Yeah.
Who else were your guys growing up?
Those two, and then Mankind, you know, Cactus Jack.
Yeah.
Was definitely up there. I liked Razor Ramon and Kevin Nash, you know, Diesel, because, I mean, they got to be so cool as the outsiders, you know, that, you know, they were already cool because they won all the time in WWF, and then
right.
they went to WCW, and yeah, they blurred those lines. You know, you didn't know what was going on, really. That was before I started reading stuff online, so
sure.
You know, a lot of people were in the dark about that stuff, and so yeah, those guys were exciting to watch. And then, you know, when Jericho and Saturn and Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero jumped, that was cool too. Benoit,
yeah,
it's, like you said, it's weird to talk about Benoit because it's not fun to think about him killing his family.
No, and
that sucked.
Yeah, as we mentioned before we started recording, that I stopped watching for a while just because it made me feel so icky about myself.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there were I had some gaps in my fandom, and that was a notable one from – because what was that? That was like 07, right? That he killed his family.
God, I feel bad not remembering.
I think it was like 07 because I think I was living in my first apartment after grad school. I don't know why I have a time and place for when that happened.
Well, yeah, I remember where I was on 9/11. You remember where you were when Benoit killed two
I remember
people.
Where I was on 9/11 too, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm probably watching wrestling.
But yeah, Jericho was my guy too. My first guys were the Rockers. I loved the Rockers, and when they broke up, when Shawn Michaels kicked Marty Jannetty in the face and then threw him through the window.
Yeah.
That, to me, like, that broke my heart, number one. And number two, that was one of the greatest angles I think I'd ever seen. And there's nothing like a good heel turn.
Right.
I mean, you talk about what draws you into this. You get character, you get action, you get, you know, sort of melodrama. And then there's nothing like a great heel turn.
Sure. Yeah, they do it right. Like, I don't know how much they built up that one. I don't think they had made the Rockers lose a bunch, did they? They started losing?
And they teased some tension.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, they always tease. Yeah, now you know it's going to happen, but when you're a kid, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I was 9, 10 years old when that happened.
Yeah, that was a great one. And it didn't seem like it made a ton of sense because they were so good.
Right.
It's like, why wouldn't they just stay together? And it's like, well, that's what happens with 90% of tag teams. Yeah. They're going to have to split them up because they're both ready. Yeah. Or one of them's definitely ready. Obviously, they went with Shawn.
Yeah.
But they got, I mean, Jannetty had some good matches with him, and, you know, he beat him for the IC title on Raw. That
was huge.
That first Raw. That was cool, yeah. I mean,
I marked out pretty huge
God,
for that.
If they did more of that. I mean, but you can't do that every week, so
no.
They have to try to spread that shit out. But, yeah, that was when it was brand. I think that was the first episode. And, yeah, that was exciting. The fact that he was in the crowd and then jumped out. And now when they do that with established guys, it doesn't make sense. Like, oh, God, Stone Cold bought a ticket to, you know, to No Way Out. Like, why didn't you comp him a seat? He's a big star for your company.
Yeah.
Why'd you make him? Sometimes, yeah, the like you were saying, they go in these weird directions where they're like, oh, yeah, you know that this is all stage, but we're going to throw this little wrinkle in. And
well, the thing that
doesn't make any sense, but
bugs me, it's lazy storytelling when like Triple H, the CEO or COO of the company, shows up like an hour into Raw. It's like, what are you fucking doing, man? Like, this is your flagship show of this company of which you are the COO, and you're just now getting here? That's just poor leadership.
Yeah, where the hell have you been? Did you have a meeting? Why was it at Monday night?
So do you have favorite moments that you remember? Ones that stand out? Like, when you think of your fandom, you go, okay, that moment, that was a big one for me. Or, like, I loved that. Or, like, pay-per-views or episodes of Raw or...
Yeah, I mean, the big ones are all just the ones that you've seen a million times. Like, Foley, you know, I watched that Hell in a Cell where Foley got thrown off, and that was crazy. Like, I had friends over, and it was like, holy shit. Like, anybody that was talking shit can shut up now because you
King of the Ring 98.
You didn't do that. Yeah. Or, like, I remember when ECW had its first pay-per-view. The first couple, I got those, and that felt cool because it was different. It wasn't cheesy. It was very much a current trend where they, you know, just the violence and the crazy out of control, you know, aspect to it was so much different that I thought that they had, I mean, they did have something special, and it got pillaged, and, you know, it got put out of business eventually, you know, because it was a great idea. But that felt like something cool where it was like, oh God, this is better than the plumber guy. You know, or the, you know, all of the clowns wrestling the old, you know, wrestling king. They got to move away from all of that, and fucking Sid, you know, went away. Like Sid,
yeah.
He was so big and strong, but not good at
talking
or wrestling.
Right?
Yeah, not good at stuff. But he was big enough to, you know, just have a job.
Here's a little Easter egg for fans of my show that may not know this. You've seen Beyond the Mat, right?
Mm-hmm.
You remember when ECW was doing its first pay-per-view, which was what? Barely Legal, 97, something like that?
Yeah.
And in Beyond the Mat, they show Paul Heyman giving the rallying speech to the troops.
Yeah.
Well, the opening to my show, at the end of that speech, Paul Heyman goes, "Start the show!" That opens That opens the intro to my show.
That's cool.
And that's not something I like to advertise because that's obviously copyrighted material.
Oh, well, but, yeah, that guy will be all right, probably.
I would think so.
The guy that made Beyond the Mat, he'll be all right.
Yeah, he'll be okay.
He's a superstar now.
But, and then, like, when I had it produced, the guy I sent it to, who was great, he was on this show, a guy named Mike Santos. He interjected some of the other parts of that speech where Heyman's like, "You have all made it to the dance." And this is the dance. Like, that's at the beginning of this show. So it's my little, like, nod to wrestling.
Yeah.
And no one gets it. I mean, no one's ever, like, mentioned it to me.
Right.
Because my friends aren't as deep into it as I am.
Yeah, I haven't seen Beyond the Mat in a while, so I probably wouldn't have. Well, I probably would have recognized Paul Heyman's voice.
Probably, yeah.
I know. Yeah, he's got a... I'm glad that he's been able to... be Brock Lesnar's guy. Yeah, because Brock is not super exciting to listen to, but you want him to chuck people around the ring.
Right.
So, yeah, perfect pairing. It didn't make sense to have him with CM Punk because Punk can talk
for
himself.
Yeah, but it still worked, though, I thought.
Well, because they're both good, it made sense. Like, Heyman would want to be with him, and then Punk would just, I don't know, would he want him around? Probably not.
I don't know.
But, Heyman is... He kills it.
He's otherworldly.
People are speaking along with him when he says that his name is Paul Heyman because he got that over. Like, just the fact that he always says, "My name is Paul," and people fucking join in. They love it. You know, it's so stupid.
And their names are not Paul Heyman.
No, they're not. But yeah, they're getting behind him because he's good at his job. Brock's great at his job. Because
he's made it mean something. And, you know, it reminds me of a principle of comedy, right? You have to make your audience, you have to make what you're talking about mean something to them. You know, you are...
Yeah, they have to identify either with you or what you're talking about.
Right, or with the other person in the story or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Wrestling, comedy, entertainment is basically figuring out a way to make the personal universal and the universal personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think wrestling is just the most unusual vehicle for doing that because, like stand-up comedy, like live music, it's one of the few sort of like in-the-moment things. And if you're watching it live, you're having this shared experience whether you know it or not. And there's something that's just so invigorating about that to me.
Yeah, sure. It draws a lot of people to it. And then the fear of doing it themselves keeps them from ever doing it, but you still are drawn to it, whether you're a fan or whether you end up getting inspired to create something yourself. Either way is fine. If you just want to take it all in, just take it all in. Dave Caldwell goes to almost every comedy show, and he has no desire to go get on stage and tell jokes, but he still gets so much out of being an audience member and connecting with all of us, hearing our different opinions. And it's great because some people wouldn't get that. Like, some people don't understand wrestling. Some people don't listen to music. That they're kind of the minority.
Right.
But Gorilla Monsoon said something so great. And I think Ian Douglas Terry just shared it on Facebook recently where he said, you know, about wrestling, for those that
get it,
no explanation is necessary. For those that don't get it, no explanation will ever do. And that explains it so well because there's something more, like we just said, for an hour, there's something more than two guys pretending to fight. And it's something more than a guy or a woman talking about their dating life into a microphone. There's more to it than that. And until you get into live performances, then you can never fully understand it, but it's there. Luckily, you know, those of us that know about it get to experience it because it is magic.
Yeah, it is absolutely magic. I was showing my wife last night, there was a WWE top 10 video, and it was like the top 10 pops of all time.
Yeah.
and number one was, it was the night that Foley won the title on Raw.
Mm.
The Tony Schiavone butts in the seats
sure.
comment.
Yeah, that definitely is up there.
And
people lost their minds.
And I was telling her, I'm like, this was a confluence of so much storytelling, because you had Shawn Michaels as commissioner, and he got his comeuppance earlier in the night. And you had the corporation versus DX, and you know, Billy Gunn was fighting Ken Shamrock, and Kane was kind of a tweener. And
yeah.
then you had Foley and The Rock fighting for the title. The McMahon's at ringside, and as all this chaos is happening, Stone Cold's music hits, the glass breaks.
Yeah.
And the loudest fucking pop you've ever heard in your life. He comes down, pastes The Rock with a chair shot, puts Foley on top, and Foley wins the title. You know, when I think back on moments, that is like one of my all-time moments as a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
I had that. I recorded that on VHS. I think I still have it somewhere here in this basement. And I used to watch it from time to time. I'd be like, God, this is like everything you want in wrestling. And it's all like, yeah. it's just like encapsulated in this 5 minutes.
Right. Sure.
So, and I don't know, man, you can't get that in a lot of other types of media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And that's, I guess, if I were to distill it down, that'd be my sales pitch to anyone thinking about getting into it.
Well, yeah, and anything that draws you to create, whatever it is, painting or animation or a podcast.
Right.
If it is meant to, you know, connect with other people or to draw them in, to entertain them, then it's probably a good thing.
You know,
a lot of it is inclusive. Now, we've moved past a lot of the shittiness of, I don't know, some people call it being PC. I think it's nice to just not rely on being a fake dickhead in order to make people, you know, like shocked laugh at you
right.
or ironically laugh. Fuck that. I want it to be clever or sincere, you know, not
or
just
get
this,
to some deeper truth, right?
Yeah. I mean, even if it's not deeper, if the surface is just being silly and being funny, that's fine.
Sure.
But you don't have to be like fake mean. That's like a weird...
Yeah, that's horseshit.
Weird angle.
Okay, so a professional wrestling thing that's funny to me, and I know you got to get out of here soon,
yeah.
so we're going to wrap this up shortly. But I mentioned before we got on the mics that we actually met for the first time at Open Screen Night when you guys were hosting and I was one of the judges.
Yeah, the Oriental, like
and
2 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. Like, yeah, two and a half years ago. And a few months later, I ended up hosting myself. And so I was hosting with this other guy and we were backstage and I told the sound guy, I'm like, I have an intro for this podcast. So play that. And then as soon as it's over, as soon as the talking is done, I'll come out and I'll take the microphone and we're standing backstage and the music starts and the guy standing next to me, my co-host is like, holy shit, dude, I've never had entrance music before. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think entrance music is, I mean, it's such a pro wrestling thing.
Mm-hmm.
Before pro wrestling, I don't know where you would get a lot of entrance music. You probably
right.
didn't.
No.
And I remember one of the first to have entrance music was Ric Flair. He came out to ZZ Top's Sharp Dressed Man.
Which, that's funny.
Fantastic. Question for you. When you were growing up or as you, you know, as you sit here, do you have entrance music that if you were to ever magically become a superstar?
Yeah.
Do you have your entrance music picked out?
Well, yeah, I think the best song, and I get to come out to it every Wednesday, is Mississippi Queen by Mountain.
You do that at Deer Pile?
Every week for Too Much Fun, yeah, we come out, me and Bobby and Sam come out to Mississippi Queen.
Sweet.
And the crowd doesn't really love it because it's every Wednesday and we just spit beer out of our mouths or play air guitar or we like pretend to break stuff. And it's, you know, we don't do a lot. It's mostly just like us. And it makes me feel like a kid in my living room just rocking out. It's very innocent because it's just 2.5 minutes. The guitar shreds the whole
yeah.
time. And he says, Mississippi Queen, if you know what I mean, a couple times. You know, the rest of the lyrics, you don't really, I mean, I know them now.
Sure.
Because I looked them up and fucking gave a shit enough to look, to see what they were.
Right.
But the motion is so good. Just that party rock and roll guitar sound. It doesn't sound like an 80s song or like a 70s, you know, jazzy song. It's more just like punchy, kind of eternal killer riff. So
it shreds, as you say.
It shreds. Yeah. It shreds harder than most guitar riffs. So I like that one for sure. That's like a go-to. Because I've got this title, I've come out to Ric Flair's...
2001,
the,
yeah.
The Zarathustra. I've come out to that. I've come out to the NWO Wolfpack song.
Nice.
I think I've come out... I've come out to Sexy Boy by Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
That was just hilarious. and so that has been crazy. Like, comedy has allowed me to meet wrestlers, work with, you know, wrestlers because of Lucha Libre and Laughs, and come out to theme music that I loved growing up. And that's been insane.
Like, wow.
Thank you, comedy, for for turning me back into a little kid, you know, in the best ways. And, you know, having this title is so stupid and silly, but people like it. You know, comics like it. People are interested in it.
It's and fucking great, man.
Thank you. It was supposed to be fun. It was supposed to be just a funny thing to do because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense for me to wrestle Chris Charpentier in a Loser Leaves Town match when he is going to move to L.A. 3 days later, but the fact that we did it and people got to laugh at that, you know, was awesome.
That's so huge.
It's been paying off. Yeah, I'm glad I did it. And I don't know what I'm going to do with it next, but I definitely have a lot of fun things in store with the Denver Comedy Championship. I want it to be just a fun thing that we get to enjoy.
Okay, so before we go, two things. One, WrestleMania predictions.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about it, but I think Shane must win, or else why even do the Raw thing?
I don't understand Undertaker's motivation in this. Like, the story hasn't been told all that well.
Have Vince, yeah, why did Vince just get the Undertaker to do this for no
reason?
But
the thing is, to me, it seems impossible for both guys to lose, which is, that's what you want in a marquee match.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm interested to see which one ends up winning.
So either way, I'm excited for how it shakes out. I think we're going to get a shitload of run-ins, and I think it's going to be an overbooked mess. But my hope is but in an entertaining way. I think it'll be all right. Championship match, Reigns versus Triple H.
Roman's got to win it, so
I would think so.
He'll probably win. Hopefully it'll be a good match where Triple H can kind of get Roman over. I don't know. If they beat the hell out of each other and have a good match, that would be cool, but I don't know. They're going to have to do something different with them.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, Ambrose versus Lesnar.
I think they'll have Brock win just because Ambrose doesn't really have to win
to
look good. Like, the fans like him. So
I think if Ambrose puts up a good fight,
they'll have him
like
get,
that's how he gets over.
He'll get the hell beat out of him, and then, they'll probably have Brock win, and then they could have Brock versus Roman, which...
That could be all right.
It would be probably good, yeah. They're both big, strong dudes.
Who walks out with the Intercontinental Championship out of that seven-man schmoss?
I don't know. I think they might keep it on Kevin Owens, or they could have Owens move up against Roman, but I don't think they're going to do that.
Nah,
just
yet. Seems unlikely right now.
So, yeah, he'll probably hold on to it.
Okay.
Hopefully that'll be good. I mean, that's a lot of people. It's a ladder match, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, yeah, that'll be fun.
Who wins the women's match? Charlotte, Sasha Banks, or Becky Lynch?
I think they might keep it on Charlotte because she's just a good... They like Ric Flair was the mold for having just bad guy champion. Then you build up all these good guy, you know, contenders, and whoever is, you know, gets over the most takes it. So, I mean, that's pretty tried and true in a good way. So I don't know if Sasha or Becky are at that point yet to take it.
Right.
I think that she holds on to it, and then they either pick one or the other to, like, really get them, you know, try to get them up to her level to take it, maybe at SummerSlam or something. But
I disagree with you. I think it's going to be Sasha.
Okay. She's doing great things.
The reason is
people like her.
I think she's the most over, and secondly, she's Snoop Dogg's cousin.
Oh, nice.
And Snoop Dogg's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame this year.
Oh, nice. All right. So, yeah, she'll...
So there's a meta reason there, maybe. Maybe right. Snoop Dogg interferes with Ric Flair. Last thing, who wins the Andre the Giant Battle Royal?
I don't know who's in there.
I'm hoping for Tyler Breeze. He'll never win. I love Tyler Breeze.
Yeah, he's all right, I guess.
He's my guy. Plugs, what do you got?
I'm at Nathan Lund on Twitter. I'm on Facebook.
Deer Pile every Wednesday?
Deer Pile every Wednesday. Too much fun, yeah. We're going to be doing Lucha Libre and Laughs events at the Ratio Beer Works.
No
over
shit.
Over the spring and summer. Yeah. We were supposed to do one coming up, but the weather's not going to be good. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
I love Ratio.
But yeah, we'll be doing... We did one last year, and it was great. So we're going to bring that back. You know, more
nice
wrestling at Ratio on that patio.
And you're watching WrestleMania on Sunday, yeah?
Yeah, if I'm not booked. Yeah, I got to try to figure that out.
Nice. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, man. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming, talking wrestling, comedy. And, I mean, man, continued success to you.
Thanks. Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for episode 89 of the John of All Trades podcast. Thank you to Nathan Lund for taking some time out and showing off why he is the Denver Comedy Champion. He is a fighting champion, and I'm proud to have him in my home and talk about wrestling, talk about WrestleMania. Coming up this Sunday, April 2nd, on the WWE Network, I'll be watching. I'm sure he'll be watching if he's not booked, but, you know, it's the life of a comedian. And for the record, since we didn't get to it, my current entrance music would be Walk by Pantera. I mean, he's got Mississippi Queen. It's fantastic. Mine would be Walk by Pantera. So, pay some bills real quick. Our sponsor is 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. All manner of web communication. No matter what you want to do, 4Degrees will help you do it better. Whether you're trying to launch a campaign, whether you're trying to reach consumers, whether you're just trying to tell your story in a new and more targeted way, 4Degrees has the solutions for you. So hit them up on the web, 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. Proud sponsor of the John of All Trades podcast. This is a production of Deft Communications. Let's hit that. Hit us up on the social media, JOAT Pod, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Snapchat. We got four of them. The four horsemen of social media. I just made that up, and it's terrible, so it's time to wrap up. We will see you next week. Episode previews are exclusively on Facebook, so make sure to like us there if you haven't yet already. And until the next one, say goodnight, Gracie.
That's good, Johnny.